So that year I did qualify for the US Open, and that was huge for me because I was able to play with the best in the world. You know, despite I didn't play great at that tournament, but I felt like that I belonged out there. And my wrist started bothering me. And I was working with my instructor at the time, Greg Morrison, and he said, you know, what you need to do is you need to go see a hand specialist. It's really important. I know this guy, he's really good. So I went to see him, and he said, you actually do have a stress fracture in your lunate bone, which is just one of these little bones in your wrist. And what the problem is with that bone is if it loses blood flow, then it kind of dies. So he really wanted to be careful with me. So he put me in a cast for 4 months. If you're playing Hazeltine, I tell everybody, you know, keep it in the fairway. And sometimes if you hit it in the fairway, that doesn't guarantee that you're going to still be in the fairway.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
All right, Jennifer. We're all about trust and transparency on the Member Guest Podcast, so I have to take one on the chin and say I messed up our last one. We started, and then I lost audio. And it happens.
Well, when you said you'd have me back, I didn't realize it'd be like 3 days later.
So. Well, we had to get, I was telling you, I was listening to it, and it was awesome. So I was so upset. This is like going to be episode 140 or something like that. I've never lost audio. I lose video sometimes because I'll like forget to, you know, press the buttons or whatever, but I've never lost audio and I felt so bad. So I'm sorry that you got to come back. But
no, it's all good. It gave me like a practice round, right?
You didn't need it. I'm serious. You didn't need it. It was awesome. So Jennifer Huber, right? I'm pronouncing last name right. Jennifer Huber. You've already given me your introduction, but we need to do it again.
Yeah, no worries.
For the audience and for the fans. So let's start with like you, and then we'll talk about your background, a little bit of how you got to where you're at Hazeltine today.
Yeah, sounds great. So I'm from Texas. I've moved up here about 6.5 years ago. My first time actually to live outside of Texas.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So my husband Matt and I have been married for 23 years. We have two kids. My daughter Haley is 20 and my son Harrison is 18. And yeah, we love living here, put in some really good roots, and don't see us going anywhere.
So where do you live and where did the kids go to high school?
Like yes.
Where?
Oh, so we live in Edina.
Okay.
Yeah, Harrison's a senior there. And then
and
my
he's
daughter,
at Second Swing, right?
Yes, yeah. He works at Second Swing. So yeah. A lot of people know him, tall kid.
In there. Yeah.
And my daughter Haley's in college in Chicago at Loyola.
Okay, awesome. And I apologize that you guys have moved. Are you used to the winters yet? Or is like this year been a little bit crazier with how cold it's been?
I feel like I've been through some winters, you know, but I will say I struggle, you know, March, April, when Texas is so beautiful. I struggle then because I'm ready for spring.
Yeah.
But the summer here, I mean, it won me over.
Yeah.
I moved up in June and I was like, okay, the winter is going to have to be really, really bad for me not to love it here.
Yeah.
Because the summer, you know, Texas is tough.
It's like you put up with the, I actually, when I tell people about living here, I actually enjoy October, November, mm-hmm. December. It's like the holidays, like October's, you know, Halloween-ish. November, you get Thanksgiving. December, you get Christmas if you celebrate that. And like, that's okay with me. I think the hard part is January, February, March for most people. Like it's dark, it's cold, it's been like below freezing for the last 2 weeks, and that's not fun. But if you can get through that and make it to survive, you know, April, May, and then like you said, get into June, July, it's the best.
100%. And then I have like anxiety in the summer because I feel like if I don't maximize every single day.
yeah, that's fair.
And they're the longest days ever too,
yeah.
Which is amazing.
That's fair. So you have a background in golf. You played at the highest level that you can. You played on the LPGA. Talk about your journey with golf, like where it started and how you got to where you're at today. We got some fun stuff to talk about, not only with Hazeltine, but the KPMG that's coming up. Like golf season is starting. You're coaching. You're doing, as my wife would say, you're doing all the things. So how do we start from like where all this began that brought you from Texas to here, now being at Hazeltine and being involved with what they've got going on over there?
Yeah, well, I would just start with golf has been really good to me. I started playing when I was 11 years old. My dad was a golfer, and he just cut down a little club for me and kind of noticed that I looked pretty natural at it. And just kind of every year started playing more and more golf. Was very fortunate to have some amazing instructors. My first golf instructor was one of the 13 founders of the LPGA, Marilyn Smith.
And not a big deal.
No, just incredible. And she planted that seed early. She told me golf has taken me to all 50 states and 22 countries. And I think that I knew that golf could be really good for me early on, despite my very first tournament there that I played in and finished last place.
It's all right. It's all right.
But that's, kind of good to tell my students too.
We've all been there.
Yeah, exactly. And then, was fortunate to have a wonderful place to practice. Hank Haney opened up a facility called Hank Haney Golf Ranch that was actually a ranch. So there was a barn that you would hit of the horse stalls.
That is awesome.
So I could literally never take a day off.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to. And I loved it. I mean, you'd find me out there 8 hours on a weekend. He had a deal there where you could buy a membership where you had unlimited golf balls for the entire year. And I am sure he lost money on that deal with me because I practiced hard and I had fun with it. I played on the high school golf team, of course, in Texas. It's year round. So interestingly, I went to high school in Plano, Texas. So what they're all about football, right? So it's a huge school. My graduating class, 1,100 kids. My junior year, I was the only girl on the golf team. So I practiced with the boys every day. We had practice, and my coach put me at the back tees with the boys. And my high school team, those boys went on to win state, and two of them went on to play for University of Texas. One went all the way on to the PGA Tour, Brad Elder. And then I would say at least four or five others went on to play D1 golf. So I would go practice with
stacked.
Them. Yeah, it was incredible. And then I'd go play these high school girls tournaments, and they'd play us way up. So I'd go shoot 66,
Yeah.
It was a really great experience. So, of course, playing a lot of tournaments as a kid and was recruited by several different schools. I had told the Texas A&M coach, she was kind of the first one to start recruiting me the summer before my senior year, that I was 99% sure that's where I was going. And then I visited SMU and just absolutely fell in love with it. And so I had to tell her, about that other 1%.
The other 0.1%. I went to SMU and I'm sorry.
Yeah. So SMU, amazing experience. Was the four-time MVP there. Just had an incredibly well-rounded college experience. Was in a sorority. I like to say that I never missed a class when I was in town, never missed a tournament, and never missed a party. So I kind of was able to do it all. And should I tell you about that record?
Yes, you need to tell it again.
I do have one little record.
To tell it again, because I actually went to try and research if it can be broken. And I think you're right.
I don't think it possibly can.
I don't think it can. Yes. No. So tell people what it is. So, this is phenomenal.
Okay, so for all 4 years, I played every single tournament that you could play. So when you go to a tournament, you take five girls and then four count. So for every single round, for every single tournament, my score counted.
Yeah. So every tournament and every single score that you had counted. Yeah. And just when I started to actually research this too, to be prepared to talk about this again for this time, I just, in terms of where golf has gone and how competitive it is, I just don't think, quite frankly, you would see any golfers, one, stick around all 4 years, two, play all four tournament or play every single tournament all 4 years. And then when you factor in that, not even one of those was just you had a really, really bad day and you got last place and the score didn't count. That's the third layer that gets put in there and you go, I don't think it can be done. It also is a testament to how popular golf has gotten, how much more competitive it's become too. And that's one that's going to be up there. People are going to talk about it associated with your name forever now.
Well, it is kind of fun. And I do remember, so I have migraines. And I would say, looking back over my career, that was something that I've had to deal with. But I remember warming up at a tournament at the University of Texas, and I was looking, and I'd never experienced this before, but I had an optical migraine, they say. So I was seeing weird things, the things were moving, and I played that round though. So that score still counted.
It still counted. So it couldn't have been the worst one. You must have figured it out.
Yeah, I'm sure I was in pain, but I did it.
Yeah, so after college, what was the transition back then to going from collegiate golf to the LPGA Tour? Like, was there something in the middle, or how did it work? Because this is my biggest, I wouldn't even call it a gripe with golf, but like I still think it's so complex with how players at all levels, you know, make it to, you know, the final tour, whether it's LPGA or PGA Tour. Like, it's complex and doesn't make sense to me. Like how other sports, you're in college and you get drafted or whatever happens. What was the process like for you?
Yeah, so I stayed amateur for the summer after I graduated, did play in the USAM and made it to the quarterfinals, but there wouldn't have been anything for me to play that summer. So that's why I stayed amateur and played all the big amateur tournaments. And then essentially you just write your check at that time that, you know, $5,000 to go to Q school. So Q school at that time was two stages, and I actually had two opportunities to make it through first stage and didn't make it, but got some good experience there. And then I didn't know, but it turned out there was a Q school for the Futures Tour, which is the Epson Tour now. So developmental tour for the LPGA.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, it's similar to what Korn Ferry is
exactly.
for LPGA.
Yep. So I went to their Q school there and finished second. So had status where I would play, you know, all the events, which, you know, looking back, they probably had about 20 events. And I missed the first couple of cuts. My dad also caddied for me. So one thing that, you know, I was very fortunate that I didn't have to find a sponsor. My dad basically, he retired really young and then worked when I was in college, had a couple different things where he worked for companies and kind of set that money aside so that he would have that for me when I went
That's
out on
awesome.
Tour. Yeah, so that was huge for me to not have to worry about that. But I was able to pretty much cover our expenses that year. Just we were driving, you know, most of the time to tournaments, and we would just go from tournament to tournament. It's really funny how things were then. You know, I wasn't even carrying a smartphone. That's how long ago it was. Yeah. And literally we would hand our scorecard in on the final round, and they would hand us a sheet of paper that would have directions to the next tournament. It would have, I know it'd have like list of hotels for like 3 weeks out. So I would call and book my hotels. I wasn't doing any of that. In fact, that year I didn't even carry a laptop.
Wow.
Isn't that funny? So
it's crazy how things have changed so much.
So different. Yeah. So that year I did qualify for the US Open, and that was huge for me because I was able to play with the best in the world. And, you know, despite I didn't play great at that tournament, but I felt like that I belonged out there. And then I was able to go back to Q school and made it through first stage and then got status on the LPGA Tour. So I was able to play out there my second year.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last time, but reflect on, you know, not only getting into the US Open and playing and maybe not playing your best. Like, did you make the cut?
No.
But you said that, like, you realized you belong there, right? Like, you know, associating the, yeah, I didn't make the cut, but I realize that I can play at this level. What was that for you? Was it, you know, like level of play? Was it mentally? Was it just like a feeling you had? I mean, how did you decide, yeah, this is clearly something that I can do at this level and then go on and get your LPGA Tour status?
Yeah, I think that ball striking, that I felt like I compared really well to the best players in the world. I felt like I hit the ball as well as them. But I knew that, you know, these ladies were just mentally tougher than me. They were, their short games were better, but I felt like that I could get there. So yeah, maybe I was a little delusional, but because
you made it, got status. And how many years did you play on tour?
So that's kind of an interesting story. So my rookie year was just like, honestly, like living a dream. By the end of that first year on tour, I was making every cut and just feeling really comfortable out there. And, you know, I will say that I did not take that year for granted. Like, I knew that I was getting to live out that dream. And just kind of felt like I had it figured out. And a lot of people were saying, you know, up and coming American player. And then at the very end, I actually went back to Q school just to try to get a little higher status. I did have status, but you could improve your status. So I went there and my wrist started bothering me. And then I kind of started getting some sharp pains. And so I decided, well, I'll just come home and, you know, take a week off and see if it goes away. And then I went and I was working with my instructor at the time, Greg Morrison, and same kind of thing, just still back to hurting. And he said, you know, what you need to do is you need to go see a hand specialist. It's really important. I know this guy, he's really good. So I went to see him and he said, you know, you actually do have a stress fracture in your lunate bone, which is just one of these little bones in your wrist. Yeah. That and what the problem is with that bone is if it loses blood flow, then it kind of dies and all the other bones around there break up. So he really wanted to be careful with me. So he put me in a cast for 4 months.
Oh, wow.
So my entire off season, I spent in a cast, but on the flip side, I had just met my now husband. So we weren't living in the same place. So I had an opportunity to kind of go visit him and kind of, you know, start fostering that relationship, which I don't think that would have happened. So, you know, there's always a silver lining,
yeah,
right?
Of course. Yeah.
But when I got the cast off, I went back to the doctor and he said, you know, something still just doesn't feel right. Will you go to San Antonio? There's a doctor there. He's the guy who wrote the book that all of us use. And just go have him take a look. And so my dad and I actually just drove there one morning, you know, from Dallas. And he said, you know what it is? He said, your ulna is just a little bit long. And you would never know that if you're just living your life.
Yeah.
But when you're beating, you know, thousands of golf balls, just the wear and tear. And he said, what we could do is we could go in and shorten that bone, or you could just shorten it. So the other option was you can go out and play and see how you do. And I said, you know what? I think I'll go out and play and see how I do. So I started rehab, and that was an interesting place that I was doing rehab. They were kind of at the forefront of some of the golf training that they're doing now. So it was kind of great because I got to start doing that. But this is where I really made a mistake as far as my career goes. I didn't understand how important it was for me to protect my status on the LPGA Tour.
Mm-hmm.
And what I could have done is kind of appealed to the tour to say, can I have a medical exemption where I would still get to play probably 10 tournaments, but then I would know I have that status. So that was young Jennifer, who was probably a little cocky, who kind of thought she had it figured out and wasn't understanding the real implications of, I was in a cast for 4 months. I'm not going to go out there. So I went out there, though, and just was doing my rehab and playing, and it was a tough year. I only made 2 cuts, and it was just like, but at the same time, you know, I was engaged and planning a wedding, so like personally things were good for me, but... so that was really tough. And I also, you know, now that I'm in this relationship, was kind of looking at the tour and thinking, is this really, you know, do I want to raise a family out here? Things that I hadn't been thinking about before that were kind of entering my mind. So I went back to Q school, obviously didn't have status after that, and did not make it through. So I had to go back to the Futures Tour. And then ironically, so that's my 3rd year as a pro. That was my best year. I played amazing. I had such a great year. But unfortunately, I was on the wrong tour. So statistically, I won an award that they, it's like the statistical player of the year. So every week in, week out, my stats were the best.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, went to Q school playing the best I've ever played, right? And just didn't have a good week. And so I didn't get my status back on the LPGA tour. So then I'm in this position where I'm married. I'm kind of, you know, itching to start having kids, but if I do that and I'm going to be playing on tour, I want to be established. So,
yeah.
I mean, that winter was tough. I really had a hard time. I couldn't decide. So then I decided, well, if I don't feel confident one way or another, I'm not done. So I went out there and I would say played a little bit of a half-hearted season.
Sure.
And then,
just weren't all in.
Yeah. You know, and decided it was, my dad was still out there caddying for me. He had a little break, but for the most part, he caddied for me the whole time. Another thing I did not mention is how I met my husband, and he actually was caddying on tour. And he was caddying my rookie year for a girl that I literally grew up playing golf, played probably my first state tournament with when I was 12. And, you know, he's from Ohio, but he had caddied some in college and he had been working in New York City and just kind of came home to Ohio to take a little break and picked up the tour. Mm. And so that's how I met Matt. And then he ended up getting a job in Dallas. So he wasn't caddying anymore. But anyway, my dad and I had like 3 tournaments left. And I told my dad, I said, you know, I don't think I'm going to, you know, go to Q school this year. And he said, that's fine. He goes, let's just go play the last 3 tournaments for fun. And then we thought about it for a few hours and we're like, you know what? Let's just go home. We can just go play. Our club. Just like, we don't really need to be out here anymore. We're done. And came home and essentially 9 months later had my daughter. So, so went when I got home, I went out to Hank Haney and just said, I'm back. I'd like to, you know, start being a teaching professional. And they said, yeah, come on. So that's when Hank was working with Tiger.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, but what's really amazing about working there is, you know, it is a teaching facility. So they don't want just anybody out there teaching. They really want these people trained well.
Sure.
So for me, I'd taken lessons from Randy Smith, Scotty Scheffler's coach. I mean, I've had all these amazing instructors in my life and understand the golf swing and understand my swing, but you know, how do I teach you?
Yeah.
So that's what they did. And Tim Cusick, who's now the head coach for the PGA Coaching Center in Frisco, he taught us how to be instructors. So we would show up at 7 a.m. And he would, you know, we would just run through videos and how do you move people into position? How do you deal with, you know, everybody's got a slice. How do you deal with that?
Yeah.
So I'm very fortunate because I have that foundation that I still have, you know, as an instructor that I think, and of course, being an instructor, so much of that is trial and error, right? It's just hours and hours of teaching people that you've seen this and you've been through this, but having that foundation just really helped me. So many instructors are just trying to figure it out. And I still am, to be honest. Well,
naturally, but I've actually never, now that you bring this up, I think anytime I've talked to a teaching instructor or pro, I've never actually asked or understood like how that becomes. Usually it's just a similar story of like, oh yeah, I played and wanted to get into instruction because I like helping people or what it is, but real quick, I want to divert to the actual foundation of like how you teach somebody.
Yeah.
What are some of those, I guess, basics? Like I've never actually thought about this before.
Yeah. Well, I really have to evaluate the student, right? I work with people from 3 to 83, lots of different physical capabilities. So I've got to look at that first. You know, what are their goals? Is this somebody who's just trying to play golf because they just want to play, you know, in a corporate event, or are they like really invested in this? So there's a lot that goes into that, you know, early on, but you know, I do like the swing plane. I like to get people on plane. I do care a lot about that. And that's probably that foundation of Hank Haney swing plane stuff. But I know it's really kind of hard to explain, but when I see somebody, I almost can see where I want their swing to go. And then I've got to figure out how do I get them there? And everybody learns so differently. So a lot of times I will start so tiny with somebody. I will just make a little setup adjustment and see how they do that, you know, how well they are able to adapt to that. And some people, it's so hard for them just to make that little setup adjustment. So we may not do a whole lot more, but then I have other people who, they just do that so easily. And then, and then we're making other changes and we can do a lot, you know, in a lesson. And then it's also, you know, you get a high level player like, you know, Mitch, who you're friends with, who, you know, plus handicap, you know, we're making very tiny little tweaks with him. And it's very much more like a partnership. He knows his swing, you know, so it's just different with different players, how I approach it.
Yeah. So then you learn there. What brings you to Minnesota from Texas?
Yeah. So my husband had traveled up here for work quite a bit and just really loved this area. And he's, like I said, not from Texas, so doesn't know that you're supposed to live in Texas your whole life if you're from there. So he had an job opportunity, and it took us a long time to make the decision because I left my parents, which was hard for me. But, you know, now we say we moved up here originally for Matt's job, but now we say we moved more for my career because it's really been amazing for my career. I had kind of stepped away from teaching a little bit as I was raising the kids, and the timing here and just kind of right after COVID, golf's exploding, and kind of getting back into teaching here, which I don't know if I would have at the same level back in Texas.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then you went to Braemar.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You got to tell the story about getting to Braemar, like how you got there, and then tell the story about how you got to, to Hazeltine as well, because that's a fun one.
Yeah, so honestly, wasn't thinking that much about getting back into teaching and was literally going out to Braemar to hit balls with my family and just happened to mention to one of the assistant pros that I also am a teaching pro. And he said, we were just saying how much we need a woman on staff. And I said, and he said, you need to come in and talk to Tommy, who's the director of golf there. And so Tommy and I played phone tag for a little bit and finally came in and he said, you know, how much are you looking to teach? And I said, I just really don't know. But he said, yeah, you're welcome to, you know, come aboard. So started teaching there and it just kind of quickly exploded. My next summer, I had about 50 people on a waiting list. I just couldn't get to everybody. So, and I think a lot of that just has to do with you've got a public course, you know, in an affluent area, you know, just all
and the, everybody's all playing golf in 2020 and 2021 too, like right around that time frame.
Exactly, and not a ton of women instructors in the area. So it was a great place for me to get started here. For
sure. That's awesome. It's how would you say you've because I know you had a little bit of a break, but even let's say like starting in 2021, like seeing not only golf explode, but the women's game has exploded too. I mean, just looking at how much more popular it feels like the LPGA Tour is and seeing, you know, how NIL has affected college golf and, you know, seeing how many more girls are starting to play. I mean, it's just, it actually is a little bit crazy. Like talk about how you've seen that over the last few years and probably how many more now of your students are, you know, either high school or collegiate level golfers.
Yeah. So in 2025, there were more than 8 million female golfers in the U.S. And that increased from, 2.5 million from 2019.
Mm. So five and a half to eight.
Yeah. One in four golfers on the course are women now.
Yeah. So, including my mom. My mom is now, she's coming over later tonight to hit her new club that she got at Second Swing. She's like into it and loves it. It's hilarious.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, it is so interesting because when I was a kid playing golf, it was very much not cool. I tried to tell those girls, hey, I am the only girl out there with all these cute boys. Like, I think I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. You got to figure it out.
Yeah. I thought I did. But you know, now it's like the golf clothes are cuter for girls. Like it's just, you see these athletic women playing golf and that probably wasn't the reputation.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just so different.
Yeah, it really is. And it's been pretty fun and cool to see. I mean, I've actually started watching a little bit more like women's golf. I think Nelly Korda is awesome. And it's really cool to see like I wouldn't even call it differences, but like how there's so many more similarities between the two games. I feel like a lot of people think maybe women's golf is different than men's golf, whether it's like the distances or whatever, but they'll show like Nelly and Tiger chipping and like Nelly is teaching Tiger some stuff. I mean, like it's so cool to see, and there's so many different aspects that like you can take away from the women's game that probably apply more to most amateur golfers, just in my opinion.
I totally agree. And when I was playing on tour, even then, you know, people would tell me that they could relate. When men were out watching, they said they could really relate to the women's game just because of the distances.
Yeah.
You know, they're probably hitting more similar iron shots. And but yeah, the level of play, it is so high. Like it is so good.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy to see. Every year I'll play with Betsy Kelly probably one or two times. And I think she's won the State Open?
Yeah, she has.
She's won the State Open.
A couple times at least.
Yeah.
Two or three.
Yeah. A couple times. And, like, she's got some friends that I'll play with, and, I mean, they just...
Oh, yeah.
They can just, like, mop us. Like, their short game and putting is so good, and, like, the ball striking is so good. When I was a member at Southview Country Club, this goes back to probably 20... I was there from, like, 2018 to... Or 2017 to 2020. A girl named... Bella McCulley and her sister Reese McCulley. They were young. They were in like high school at that time, and we had played a couple times. And I just remember thinking like, these girls are phenomenal, and they're going to be really good. And lo and behold, now they're both at the U. They're both crushing it. I think Bella's played at a U.S. Open or maybe two now, and it's just it's crazy to see the level of talent that's coming up in the game.
Yeah, those girls are no joke. They are so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
They're awesome. And they're just good humans, too. They're amazing. They're fun to play with. I'll never forget the first time we played. She's like, oh, can I join you guys on the back now? I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. And I mean, at the time, she couldn't have been more than 15 years old. And I was like, where do you want to play from? She's like, oh, I'll play with you guys. And I was like, oh, man, we're about to get our asses kicked. And we did. I think she shot a couple under on our group. It was pretty cool to see. So.
Yeah, I have a student, Shayla Pearson. She's 11. She's incredible. Like, she shot 68 this summer. And you ask her who her favorite golfer is, and she says, Isabella McCauley.
Really?
Every time.
That's awesome.
And Isabella's been so sweet to her, too. And Reese also. Yeah. Great kids.
That's super cool. So you leave. Well, I shouldn't say leave. What ends up bringing you to Hazeltine? I want to kind of switch and talk about that, because a lot of cool stuff coming up. You guys are doing a lot of cool things I want to talk about. So
yeah, absolutely.
What brings you out to Hazeltine and our neck of the woods now from Braemar.
Yeah. So, finished up teaching 2 years at Braemar and just kind of realized that, needed to move somewhere where I could just focus on teaching. So I actually met with a local pro, Paul Kelly, who's at Wood Hill, and he and I had coffee and sat down, and he just basically, I made a list. Here's all the pros that you need to reach out to. So got my resume together and just sent it to a few of those people on the list. Phil Anderson at Hazeltine being one of them. Not really thinking much of it. Like, oh yeah, I'll send my resume out there. And didn't hear anything from him for about a week or maybe two, and then got the email that he'd like to have coffee. So I responded, and he said, give me some dates. So I gave him like 2 weeks worth of dates, and he picked the first one. And I was like, okay. All right. So
this is interesting. Yeah.
So I decided, okay, I better learn everything I can about Hazeltine, right? So I get on the website. The first thing I see, Mike Barge, director of instruction, also went to SMU. I mean, what are the chances, right? And then just kind of looking over, didn't see a woman on their staff and their professional staff. So thought, well, that's kind of interesting. So then morning of the interview, big snowstorm, like March snowstorm. And I told my husband, I said, you know, I'm from Texas, remember? So I'm like, I don't know if this interview is going to happen. Yeah. And he said, you better be prepared. He said, I don't know either, but go ahead and drive over there and just kind of be in the area. So I think I went to like a Caribou and hung out for 30 minutes and probably so nervous. And then now I know Phil, and I know for sure he would of course be at work. I should say.
Shows up.
Yeah. He would
rain, snow, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So we had a really good chat. And one thing I remember him saying is, your timing is really good. And, you know, that's kind of how it is, right? Is everything is timing. And then did meet with the head professional probably 2 days later, Kyle Brandt. And Kyle, I know, had mentioned that he was really happy to bring a woman instructor on staff, that I'm the first one at Hazeltine. So one of the things that I really wanted when I was looking, you know, where to go, of course, would be, you know, a great practice facilities, somewhere to teach in the winter, and a place where I could take my current clientele with me, you know, as much of them as I could. And, you know, Hazeltine really, you know, checked all those boxes for me, which was absolutely incredible. And then not only that, just, you know, walking the halls and the history, the mission with my background being a player, you know, having played in some of the tournaments, not at Hazeltine, but, you know, in the USAM and the US Open. And like, I just felt really inspired being there. And then, you know, when I first started teaching, I was a little nervous. So I brought my clients, I brought the ones who I felt like would feel the most comfortable, you know, there.
Yeah.
And of course, Shayla was one of my first, because she just always makes me look good. She's just so amazing. And the range, everybody's so serious, you know, they're serious golfers out there.
Yeah. I mean,
great people, but the range was so quiet coming from Braemar.
Yeah.
And I remember that first lesson, I'm whispering to Shayla.
Really?
I'm a lot more comfortable now.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
But it's just kind of a different experience, but
it's funny, like out of towners when they come to town, because obviously I'm at Windsong, but we have a lot of things between Windsong and Hazeltine. I feel like the memberships are close, right? With a lot of the members and events and stuff that we do, and people always ask, like, you know, what are your favorite places to play? And like, I always bring up Hazeltine and I bring up Windsong, and like, when you think about, I feel like the why, it's their golf clubs, right? Like, to when I say golf clubs, I mean like it's just golf. You know, there's a lot of country clubs out there that have pools and all these things. But like to your point, when you walk around Hazeltine, like you just feel you're there for golf, right? And like that feeling you get when you're on the range or at the practice facility, like everything is just perfect for the sport of golf. You know, there's not a lot that goes into, you know, thinking about everything else. It's probably why it makes you guys such a great venue for all these. I mean, I think the Ryder Cup is just the best event in almost all of sports, probably, in my opinion. You guys are going to host one of those, and you've already hosted one. You've got the KPMG coming up. What makes Hazeltine such a great venue, and why do places love coming to play there? It's hosted a USAM now as well. It clearly, you guys have figured something out and just have a great place for to be able to support those types of things, too. I mean, that's not easy to do. There's a ton of great golf courses, but to be able to be that and be able to support those, what makes it so good?
I would say the membership. You become a member of Hazeltine because you believe in the mission, and that is to host major championships, right? So I've gotten to experience one, the USAM, in 2024, and I want to say all but two members were there volunteering.
Wow, that's cool.
Yes, it's incredible. It was like, oh, this is what they do. You know, some of these people have been chairs of committees for, you know, 30 years. Like, they are just a well-oiled machine. So, and then, you know, obviously the property, you know, they have so much space.
Yeah.
So I think that helps. And then, oh, the course is hard. You know,
it is hard. It is hard.
I have to remind myself often, and my students, you know, who are members, like, hey, you know, you're playing a really hard golf course.
Yeah.
You need to go play somewhere else every once in a while, yeah, so you remember.
A hard golf course, and one they can just stretch out for miles. I mean, it's totally. It's fun to play like the, you know, everyday tees, and every now and again, like especially that first tee, you look back to where like they tee off from, and I've played from that box before, and it's just like, this is an entirely different hole right now with where it is. And then same with 16 out there by the water, like with the, you know, the tee box is up basically behind 15 green, or you can walk all the way down back by the fence and tee off from there. You're just like, yeah, this is a little bit different, you know, if we're going to play from here.
Oh, I mean, like sometimes there's a whole hole in between. Like, yeah. I mean, they're so far back.
Yeah.
Like the par 5 15. The tees that the guys played in the USAM, like, I mean, I think it was 150 yards to the tee I play from, and I typically play from 6,600 or so. I mean, it's yeah, actually what's, crazy.
Is it 13, the par 3, that they can play from like 260 or something like
yeah,
that?
It's something.
Am I right
on that? I feel
like
it. I don't even know that I have a club in my bag. Like, it's so long.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
And I remember they were talking about the USA and there were guys just hitting like 5 irons.
Yeah, it's,
what?
That was demoralizing to watch those guys. I hung out on the range a lot. During the USAM, like, it's just incredible how far these guys hit it.
Yeah.
I can't even fathom it myself.
Yeah. Well, you all have the KPMG coming up, this year. I mean, it really is. It's the number one tournament for women, right? I'm not like going out a limb saying that, like, it's pretty well known to be,
it is
like the best tournament, yep, for women golfers. So
yes,
as you guys are looking forward to that, I mean, one, how do you prepare for it? Like, how does the staff prepare for it, and like, what are you most looking forward to when it comes to having, quite frankly, like the best women golfers in the world at your course?
Right. Well, it's been interesting just to observe the staff. They've been in meetings for probably a couple years already.
Yeah,
planning for this. I think my role will increase as we get closer and during the event. But you know, as an instructor, I'm not involved too much with the operations, but just, It is incredible everything that goes into putting on an event like that.
Yeah, and then what? So you guys have the short course now too, and then can we talk a little bit about the new practice facility? Because I like the grind. I think practicing is fun, and so I've been seeing it go up over the past couple of years. And obviously, like, you get to teach people out there. So what's up with the new practice facility and short course, and how cool is it now?
Yeah, well, remember how Phil said my timing is really good?
Yeah.
This was part of it. So, okay.
He was foreshadowing all this great stuff that's coming up. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I absolutely love the short course, first of all. It is just so, so much fun and a great tool for me as an instructor. So I think I've looped that thing more than anybody else. I went around it sometimes 3 times a day. I got in a lot of steps
kind of
in the fall, and then now we have, I believe it's about 9,000 square feet golf performance center. So we've got 7 hitting bays. 5 of those actually open up to the driving range.
Sweet.
Yeah, which is going to be amazing. And then we have like bar and a huge putting green and a conference room. Putting green, half of it has putt view. And I absolutely love that. It's so fun. It's like a cheat code. It's
gamifying putting, right?
Totally.
It makes it fun. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I am thoroughly enjoying that. But yeah, we've got all the TrackMan technology. And Hazeltine is now on TrackMan. So you can play.
Oh, sweet.
Yes.
Yeah, you can play the course on there. It's probably pretty realistic too.
Yeah. Like one of my students says, oh, 17. And I said, well, we're just going to camp out on 17. We can do that.
Yeah. What do you, as we wrap up, you know, if any players end up like seeing this podcast, like what's the advice for players that are going to come out and play Hazeltine, or maybe see it for the first time? Like when you think about the course, when you think about the setup and all those things that make it great, like what are people going to get to prepare for, and what are they going to see at the KPMG?
Well, if you're playing Hazeltine, I tell everybody, you know, keep it in the fairway. And sometimes if you hit it in the fairway, that doesn't guarantee that you're going to still be in the fairway. So
yeah, very true.
I be aware of that, like the way the ball kicks, you know, like on number 9.
Yep.
And that goes for both sides on number 9. You could hit it a little left and end up in the left. And then, you know, the bunkers are tough, deep bunkers. The rough is really challenging. It took me, I think just this summer, I finally figured out the rough because, you know, I grew up with Bermuda. So just learning how
I'll
to
take
out
I'll
this.
Take any tips, by the way, of how to get out of that rough.
Okay. So this is this is kind of what I figured out. I was really trying to muscle it out before. Like I was gripping it tight and trying to kind of swing hard. And last year I loosened up a little bit, and I thought about creating a little, like as much speed as I could at the bottom, but not by like forcing it, gripping so tight. So that's
sure.
That's kind of what worked for me. And then just obviously you got to be aware of what you're trying to get out, hit out of there.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to roll out a little bit more and probably not going to fly as far. But I don't know, that worked last summer. We'll see.
Yeah.
It could be totally different this summer.
It changes year over year. What are you most excited for, being able to have it there? Like, is there anything that you're like, oh wow, yeah, I can't really wait for this. Like, is it seeing a certain player? Is it just seeing like the course and all the, you know, fans there, or what is it?
Well, I tell you, I'm most excited for my juniors to get, particularly the girls, to get to watch the best in the world.
Yeah.
Because I did that when I was a kid, and then I got to play with those women, you know, on tour. So I wonder, you know, what girls out there watching that someday may be out there playing. But just there aren't, there just aren't that many opportunities with, to get to watch somebody at that level.
Yeah.
Women in particular, just the way, you know, the tour's all spread out. So that opportunity for the kids, I think, is going to be really great.
And just the best in the world at what they do, like women's golf, literally having the best there. I mean, it's awesome that TPC Twin Cities gets a PGA Tour event, but like, if we're being completely honest, it's always a week after the British, and it's not always, you know, literally the best. It's not like a major, right? And that's just really cool that you guys get to be able to have that. So I'm looking forward. I'm definitely going to be out there. Hopefully I can figure out a way to get access to it. Can I get a media pass? Is that a thing?
We'll find out. I don't know.
we'll figure out. We'll have to ask somebody to see if I can get a media pass, but we're going to have you back hopefully like maybe a week or two before the actual tournament. We can do something short on that. It was great to hear your story. I appreciate you coming on and doing this for a second time. I apologize for all the issues the first time, but we did it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I told you, you know, I'm a listener, so
thank you for the support.
You've made this really fun, and I've, you know, thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. Good. Thank you very much, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Thank you.